Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 363 for comics originally released on July 23rd, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Star-Spangled War Stories number 1, featuring the premiere of G.I. Zombie. This is a little bit of an odd duck, in my opinion, Drew, because this is, what, their third attempt at a war book? Because they had G.I. Combat and then...
Men of War.
So I was a little, gee, is this going to work or not? And then the thing starts out with what seemed like at first a couple of pages of just what does this have to do with the G.I. Zombie?
Or war stories.
Or war stories. That, yes, that was the other thing that struck me on this. This isn't a war series at all so far.
Yeah, there's the one panel where there's a weapon that could be used in war shown. That's the only tie-in that I could see to make this a war story.
If they had gone with G.I.P.I. or P.I. Zombie, or he's more of a private investigator.
P.I. Zombie would have been better.
Yeah. It didn't make sense. We've got the two leads. Let's see. It's Jared, and the other one is Carmen King, I guess, who goes by Tiff initially, as if to confuse us. This had some really interesting stuff. It had a bit more gore than I was expecting. A lot of exposition about, you know, what it means to be a zombie and stuff. And apparently one of the gifts it gives you is you speak fluent exposition. Or at least as fluent as exposition can be spoken. Because, man, some of that was a bit clunky.
Yeah, very clunky.
This whole thing felt like setup, and frankly kind of incomplete setup in that regard. Because I have no idea who these two work for, why that group uses a zombie, how they're connected to the government, what's going on. And it's not until like about 4 pages until the end of the story that we realize or are told they're tracking down a gun runner that I guess had stole stuff from an army base or something.
Yeah, and that wasn't really clear until, yeah, way into it. And yeah, it was not what I was the bill of goods that I was sold. I felt a little snookered when I was reading this because I think I had mentioned before, looking forward to some kind of war comic, and you know, boy, wouldn't it be great if they brought Sergeant Rock back, and then this came out, and I'm like, well, okay, this is they're doing something. Thank you, DC, for giving us some kind of war comic, and this isn't it.
I was expecting with G.I. Zombie that we would have some kind of war story set, you know, overseas, you know, Afghanistan or maybe a fictional country, whatever. And it's basically this other army up against this one unkillable, you know, G.I. guy, because he's a zombie. He just keeps getting back up, keeps going over or something.
Yeah, or that's what makes him such a great soldier is he really can't die because he's actually a zombie. That's what I was expecting. And this is instead... It's very reminiscent of True Detective, it's not as good as True Detective, but the HBO series where they're the undercover and in the biker bar, and there's that aspect, and it's kind of a strange buddy cop story as well, and you know, they're two very different characters, but nothing about Star-Spangled, nothing about war, but there is a zombie in it, so they got part of it right.
But you're right, this is more undercover cop kind of a story than anything remotely war story-ish.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed by that, and I'm kind of curious if this title is going to flip features after this story ends, and if it's going to be another ongoing another series of miniseries disguised as an ongoing series. And on the one hand, I'm hoping it's not, because that's proven not to work for DC. On the other hand, I'm hoping it is, because this isn't a strong enough material to carry a series, in my opinion.
The Darwin Cook cover is very reminiscent of a war story. So do you think that this character will have a flashback origin coming up or something of his time in the war?
It would feel out of place in this story.
I don't understand how this cover works with this story that we're given.
Oh, it doesn't at all. It what the cover is selling versus what we get, very different. And that and the title positions this very incorrectly. I think people who like this story, and it's not a bad story, they're not going to see it or come to this title because of the title, the cover, etc. The people who like the title, the cover, etc. are going to get this story, and it's like, but it's not what I was expecting or wanting.
Did he even mention any of his time in the service at all in any of the exposition?
He mentioned that he was in the service, that he is a soldier, but it was so vague, I couldn't even tell which branch of the military.
Yeah.
And again, that goes to clunky exposition as much as anything else.
All that being said, I thought it was an okay story, although a bit clunky. I do think it's positioned entirely wrong. The art is not very strong. The interior art. I mean, you get the Darwin Cook cover, and then you get this interior art that's actually something very different. And the characters aren't drawn exceptionally well. The story, there are some very strange turns of phrase in here that feel, like you said, very clunky. But there are some parts of the story that I thought, well, that is interesting. Too bad it's in a story I didn't know I wanted to read.
Yeah, because it had some good ideas and some potential in there. It just wasn't fully formed, and it was, like you said, mispositioned for the market, I think.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of the iVampire series, both in terms of the art style and just general nature of it.
Okay.
But I don't know that people who got that would see this cover and say, well, I should go read that. And it's not exactly like that other series either. I mean, to me, this was slightly above average, but not enough to make it to that 4. So it gets a high 3 from me.
Yeah. It's a 3 from me as well. And, it could have been a high 2 just because of I thought it misfired a little bit in its promise and execution. But, I don't think I'm going to check this next one. I might check this next one out just to see if they actually get towards a military story at all, or I might just keep track of it on the solicits and see if this is when this arc finishes. Like you said, perhaps there's some next mini series within this series that is more Star Spangled War story centric, and I might check that out.
That makes sense. I think I'm gonna stick with it. I'm curious where they're going with this, and I want to give it a fair shake, so I'll give it this arc, but either the next arc is going to be a different character and therefore kind of reset the clock on that, or it'll be more of this, at which point I've got to decide, do I stay with it or not?
Yeah.
Because I'm not sold on either lead character. I'm not sold on the premise of the series because it's not even in here.
Right.
The chasing down of the Gunrunner is not the point of the series. It's just what they're doing today.
Yeah, and you're right. Neither character really resonates with the reader.
I've got nothing to hang my hat on with this story. Nothing to say, oh, wow, it's got a great concept or a great character or great dialogue or great action or a great anything. And there's nothing horrible about this, but it lacks that standout feature to kind of say, yes, it definitely is on my list because. So for now, it's on probation, essentially.
Yeah.
So we'll see where they go with this. I'm curious. I have no reason to think this is going to do any better than any of the other war books that they've done, despite the fact it's not a war book, or maybe because of the fact it's not a war book.
Right.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure.
This is Storm number 1. Now, obviously, you know who Storm is. I mean, everybody, she's been in the movies and all that stuff, so she's pretty well known. How many of the X books are you reading these days?
Well, let's see.
A couple, not really, none.
One or two, and I'm not really loyal. I jump around.
So you're aware of the stuff, but not steeped in the current status quo of anything. All right. I thought this was a really good first issue. I like the fact it was essentially a done in one story. Flip side of that is because it was done in one, it's not the deepest of stories. But I thought it did a really good job establishing Storm's status quo, her personality, kind of the various taglines she has gone by. You know, in terms of being, previously a goddess, queen of Wakanda, an X-Men, all of that kind of stuff. So I think anyone not too familiar with the character has enough to get on board here pretty well. I just don't know that Storm really needs a series right now or how well this one's going to get supported. it's not bad. It's slightly above average, but there's a lot of comics coming out today, and there are a lot of other books I would recommend before this one, even though there's absolutely nothing wrong with this by and large. So, I mean, since you're not as steeped in the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe, what was your take on this?
I didn't like it, but I am also comparing it probably unfairly to the other solo X books that I am reading, Nightcrawler, Cyclops, Magneto. Those are all head and shoulders above this.
I would agree with that. I would definitely say, from my vantage point, out of those, I would probably order them Nightcrawler, Magneto, and Cyclops tying for that next position, and then this one.
Yeah, I put Magneto on top, but they're really good books. And this I thought, you know, we were talking a little bit about exposition in the last book. There's a lot of narrative dialogue, inner dialogue boxes in here, and it just that's the way they're telling the story, and that's fine. I just felt this was not that interesting of a story. Like it just seemed like something out of somebody's drawer. I have this Storm story. I haven't used it. Let's crank this out. It didn't seem like it. It seemed dated, maybe, and not really that fresh of a take on her. And yeah, I didn't like the art.
I wouldn't say it was particularly dated, but it also isn't kind of in lockstep with what's going on with her appearance in the other books.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this, I guess timeless is the word I would use in terms of they could have done this a year ago or a year from now just as easily as they did now.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah. And that may be what you meant, whereas when I hear dated, I'm thinking it's kind of set at some arbitrary or specific point in the past and not current. This was just loose in continuity, free-floating.
Yeah, I guess. It doesn't feel present to me. It doesn't feel like a modern Marvel comic.
Interesting. I can see where you're coming from. From my vantage point, those other solo X books that we were just talking about, Nightcrawler just coming back from the dead, okay, that's a reason to give him his own book. Magneto and kind of the World War II parallels and all of that, the militant protection of the mutants and stuff, great mandate for a new series. Cyclops, the young version hanging out with his dad in space and stuff, cool premise for a series, strong mandate there. Here, it's just a day in the life of Storm.
It is.
There's nothing here saying, oh, this is why she's getting her title. And it's a good issue. It does well on characterization. It plays nice in the X corner of the universe. It's slightly above average, but it doesn't sell the series. And to me, it's a low four. It's clearly above a three, but again, for a first issue these days, I don't think that's enough. You got to come out swinging with your A game. And, oh my God, I can't believe it took them this long to do this series kind of a first issue. And that was not what we got here.
Yeah, there's nothing to really recommend here unless you are reading the X books and, you know, can't get enough. In my opinion, there's nothing here for someone just to recommend and say, hey, you've got to check this out because they've really done something interesting with her character, or now you really kind of get her, like you do with the Magneto book, or like you do with the Nightcrawler book. And so for me, this is a two, actually. This is something that I think is just for those folks that are just running out of X material to read and want a little more story. I don't think it's even close to above average.
I guess for me, the telling of this story was really good, but to me it also felt like a fill-in issue that could have been in X-Men or something like that. And does it warrant a new series or being the first issue of a new series? Certainly not. But as the contents of an issue go, they did so few comics tell a full story.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of insight into her character, some of the struggles she goes through, a bit about her powers, and it's all, for the most part, a lot of that is shown, not told.
Yeah.
So I think it makes it into that above average category. I'm not going to say it crosses the line and goes much further, but it gets just across that line for me.
You know, I probably would have been, for better or worse, I probably would have been a little easier on this if this had been a one-off in the Brian Wood X-Men series or something, and they just focused on her for a little while, and I was like, oh, okay, that I think I might have it might have worked a little better as that in well, that the, book, which isn't really fair, I guess, but it's the same story, and it's here it's a number one issue, it's launching a series. I think I'm grading it a little harder.
Well, and I think you are, but I understand why you are. As the first issue of a series, you have certain expectations. And I guess I'm being a little lax on those same expectations. Because I agree with you entirely that if this were an issue of the Brian Wood X-Men title, and really, if you just swapped Beast with Rachel or one of the other female characters from that title, because I mean it's pretty much an all female cast. Not that you couldn't have Beast in there, but you've got enough other regular members that could have easily replaced what he does here. It would have fit in perfectly there. It seems like an odd choice of story to launch a new series with. And again, the lack of a mandate for why this series, why now, is a weakness, but that's more a weakness in how it was packaged than in the contents of the story, if you know what
right.
I mean.
Yeah.
But I can totally see where you're coming from there, and for a first issue, it ought to be something these days that most readers who would pick it up would say, wow, I can't believe it took them this long to do this series, and this wasn't that.
Right.
So if you're a big fan of Storm, well worth checking out. If you're not, Magneto, Cyclops, Nightcrawler, there are a ton of other solo X books that are worth picking up above this one.
Agreed.
Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah.
This is Supreme Blue Rose number 1 from Image Comics. This is written by Warren Ellis, and Tula Lote is the artist. There's a very interesting art style here with the blue lines flowing throughout and the use of color and stuff like that. It's not the sort of thing I tend to gravitate towards. It worked reasonably well, but I kept thinking there was some meaning to some of this in the art that was eluding me.
I kept feeling that throughout the entire book, not just with the art.
Well, I was going to say, with the story, it's a bit more, and I'm not sure what word to use here, surreal, cerebral, out there, something, than I tend to kind of gravitate towards. And, I mean, it's Warren Ellis with the writing, so I'm not surprised by that. He tends to go beyond the safe boundaries of the norm for storytelling, and usually has some really cool ideas and comes at things from a different angle. But this was one of those where I felt I was looking like at the outfield at a baseball game when all the action's happening at home plate or whatever. You know, it's like I'm just not looking. I'm not seeing the right stuff.
Yeah. Now, did you read Supreme, the original Rob Liefeld Image book?
Yes. I think I've read most, if not all, of the previous Supreme stuff.
Okay. I've not. So who is Supreme in that series?
Okay. Let me tell you what I think the gist of this series is based on what we got.
Okay.
And see how much of that kind of you picked up.
Okay.
Now, about a little before halfway through, we've got that whole arch of Supreme and Darius Dax's, office.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Darius Dax is essentially Lex Luthor. He has proof through that arch that Supreme, who is Superman essentially, exists. And in this world, his alter ego is Ethan Crane, who we get on that next page there.
Okay.
And Darius, a la Lex Luthor, has essentially hired Diane Dane, literally here has hired, who's essentially Lois Lane, to investigate and find proof of Supreme or Superman.
Okay, that's good information. I didn't know that. That's good. Okay. I didn't know that. That's who Supreme was. I probably should have done a little Wikipedia search or something to find that out, because that would have helped.
It was kind of hinted at the page opposite the archway, when you've got Ethan and then kind of that blurring...
With the triangle on his chest loosely.
With the triangle on the chain, chest,
artistically drawn there. Yeah, okay. I guess, yeah.
That last panel is a bit more vague than I think it should have been. I think if that were clearer, not too clear, but clearer enough... I mean, it's funny because this is kind of a warped version of some of the ideas that they've toyed with, but mainly kind of danced around with the Superman stuff in both the comics and Smallville and stuff like that, of Lex kind of knowing Clark is Superman, but not knowing it, not being able to prove it, and hunting down proof of who Superman is. And this is sort of a Vertigo-ish take on that idea, but it's so obliquely referenced that if you don't know who the parallels are from previous versions of Supreme, I could see where you would have a very different reading of this and potentially a somewhat confused reading of this. And that's a case where with some writers, Grant Morrison at times, Warren Ellis occasionally, more so with Grant Morrison though, where they know the story so well they've just neglected to tell key parts of it. So as a reader, you can come out just baffled. And I think here, the pieces are all on the page. I think it was well told. But the whole art style gives it enough otherworldliness or some such that I kept thinking I was missing a level of the story. And I don't know, maybe I am, maybe I'm not.
Well, in those first 3, 4, 5 pages where she is actually somewhere else and it may have been a dream, I don't know, seemed like it was a dream, at least in the story. And she's having the discussion with the man that has a helmet that doesn't have a helmet on his face.
Mm-hmm.
That was very confusing.
Yeah,
that whole sequence was incredibly confusing, and I don't know what I was supposed to get out of that. Basically, the story for me started when she woke up, and then I was able to follow that. Those first 5, 6 pages, I don't know what I was supposed to attain from that.
Well, and that's part of what I was talking about with the, it's a little more surreal out there, or, again, I don't know how best to describe it. It's playing with the ideas somehow of dreaming and reality not being real but seeming real or whatever. I don't know what you should have gotten out of that either. I don't know what I did get out of it, if anything, other than this is a really weird way to start the story.
Yeah, yeah. It's your first introduction to this story, and it reminded me a little of that Pretty Deadly, the Kelly Sue DeConnick book, which started off so hard to get anything out of. And I've been told later that as it went on, you know, as you got to issue 4 and 5, that it started to, everything started to come together. But my goodness, I mean, who wants to put in that kind of time to figure out a story?
That kind of time, money, or just investment on the hopes that it pulls together.
That it might pay off.
Yeah, yeah. This one reminded me a little of Translucid, where it's like, I know what I think I'm reading, but I'm not sure what I think I'm reading is what the author thought they wrote. And again, with Warren Ellis, I expect a little of that. He's, I don't want to say more creative or deeper thinker or something like that than a lot of writers. Because, well, on the one hand, I definitely think he is. On the other hand, that's kind of unfair to the other writers. A lot of them are doing really good stuff. But a lot of writers, again, like on Storm, like on, less so with G.I. Zombie, but a lot of mainstream comics, they're sticking to formula. They're sticking to the safe what is expected of a superhero book or a mystery book or whatever, whereas this is not at all what you would expect out of a superhero book. And the fact the fact it's playing with analogs of Superman, Lois Lane, and Lex Luthor is fun, but a little, not, I don't say non sequitur-ish, but it makes it all the more puzzling in some ways. It's like he's got this really cool, clever idea of a story and is almost shoehorning it into the Superman mythos of sorts. I was going to say because he can, but I'm not entirely sure why. And then some of the stuff at the end at the cafe with the bodyguard guy, I don't know what's up with him, or the
with
whole scene after
that. His birth defect,
that.
He kept referring to his birth defect.
Yeah, it's like you can't make out his face or something. I don't know who he is supposed to be or how he plays into this or what's going on there. Again, another level of the story that I think I'm just kind of missing. And then there are those 2 pages right before that with Professor Knight.
I thought that was an ad. The first time I flipped through it as an ad for an upcoming Image series because it didn't fit. I just thought, oh, that, and then I was looking for the eye, and there was no eye, so I'm like, well, that's not an ad then. Wait a minute, this must be part of the book. It makes no sense.
I think it's what she's reading on her phone in the next scene, but I'm not sure.
You think that's that final? Okay, I see the cross. I see the cross on the, okay. Oh,
I'm
my
guessing.
Goodness. That's incredibly obtuse.
Obtuse is a good word for this, because I think there's a story in there, and I'm just not... I'm at the surface level of it, and I'm not seeing the depth.
I'm curious, did you sample this, or are you in for the first three?
I probably pre-ordered the first three.
Okay.
Whether I stick with it or not beyond that, at this point, I don't know that I will pre-order anymore.
I just sampled. So, I mean, in my shoes, I just have this one. I've only invested the one.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can't really see anything here that tells me this is a book for you because I feel like it's just shooting over my head for some reason, and I feel semi-literate, like I should be able to comprehend these things, and there's just a lot of pages here where I got nothing out of it. I mean, the night pages, you just had to explain them to me. That's silly sad. Those, and then the first five I thought were, so, you know, it's a 20 page comic or so, and half of the pages I get nothing out of. So that's not good.
I could be totally wrong on my take on those pages.
No, I think it's very subtle. If you look at the screen, there is a cross on something that really could be a ambulance. Yeah. If you turn it sideways, it could be that ambulance, which is the final part of that sequence, the two-page sequence.
But subtle and obtuse are not things I look for in describing a good comic.
I mean, Warren Ellis is doing some great stuff. I love his Moon Knight. I thought the first Trees was really good and accessible. This is not something I can recommend to anyone, and so it's a two.
I waver between giving it a two because I just didn't get it, and giving it a four because I can see that there's probably some underlying brilliance to it.
It might be.
It's just like I'm too short to see over that ledge, and if I could, it'd be amazing.
Uh-huh.
So I think I'm going to split the difference and give it a three, which is ironic because I certainly don't think it's average, but I'm just undecided if I think it's above or below average. I think my reading of it was below average. I'll grant that.
Yes, my experience with it was below average. Your mileage may vary.
Again, I've got some background in the Supreme stuff. I know some of the wackiness they've done before with the multiple versions, the I forget what they called the Limbo Supreme City thing. I don't know how much of that's going to come out in this or not, but some of the baggage I'm bringing with me may be making me think there's more brilliance underlying the surface than maybe there is. Again, with Warren Ellis, I'm going to give him some of the benefit of the doubt there, but I shouldn't be coming out of a first issue a little perplexed as to where the heck is this going to go.
Or just straight up, huh?
Yeah.
Which is where I am.
I think this would have been better if it had been a longer first issue, giving him more room to kind of develop the story and let us figure out where it's going.
Right.
So,
and maybe if they would have started in with her waking from the dream and then thrown some of that, all that in the background with the extra sketch stuff as extraneous material, it would have worked a little better for me. I don't know. It just started off on the wrong foot and it didn't really improve.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It again, obtuse, subtle. I think for first issue, you need a little bit more clarity. Clarity, I think, is the right word. Not crystal clarity, but enough to kind of hang your hat on again.
Yeah.
I can see a number of different directions this goes in that could be a lot of fun, and a couple that it's like, yeah, it's just not for me. So I'm going to give it a few more issues since I've probably already got them pre-ordered. But I prefer things that are perhaps a bit more surface level than this is.
Yeah.
So I have just gotten back from Comic-Con last night as we record this. We're recording this on Sunday, August 3rd. It goes up on the 4th. So I got home after the UPS store closed, so I have not gotten my last shipment or two. I have not finished reading the comics from either the 9th or the 16th. I hope I'm close on the 9th, though. So once I get to the UPS store tomorrow and get this shipment and then next week's shipment for stuff, I'm going to have over a short box worth of comics to read and stuff, and need to record the mail reports for June. Then the numbers come out, so I'll be doing that next week for July. So it may be a little bit before I'm all kind of caught back up and such. So yeah, I've read nothing else for this week other than this.
I was able to listen to your podcast panel. That was really, really great. A new mix of people on there that I hadn't heard before. And I like your and your sister's kind of take on the day after, or the after the day's events, kind of reflecting on the con. That was cool.
I'm glad you liked that. I really enjoyed doing the panel. Suntress put together a great mix of people. None of them had I known prior to doing that panel. I thought it was a great discussion. A lot of fun. And then since my sister and I, when we go to the convention, often just part ways at the beginning of the morning, kind of doing that sync up at the end of the day of, well, how did you spend your day? How did I spend my day? That was just kind of fun. It was tiring because we would always get back to the hotel just kind of exhausted, and then to spend another, 15, 20, 30, 45 minutes recording and then start to get ready for the next day, it was fun to do. San Diego is just such a huge convention that the one I went to is different than the one my sister went to. And then I spent a large part of today just catching up on emails and such. And a lot of them are, this announcement was made. And I'm like, when? And others, it's like, well, yeah, I was in the room when that one was made. That one I knew about. But fascinating convention. And then yesterday, we went to San Antonio's Wizard World. So I'll have an episode up on that with my sister later this week. So quite a few conventions lately, and just a lot of fun. I had a great time in San Diego, got to hang with a lot of people, had some really good discussions with people, well worth going to.
Yeah, it sounded like a blast, and definitely a bucket list thing for me. I definitely want to fly out there sometime and check that out. And the sheer magnitude of directions you can go, it seems like, pop culture-wise or comic-wise, that you can, it sounded pretty fascinating.
It is. I do recommend, before going to San Diego, go to one that's, because in my mind there's kind of, and my sister and I talked about this on the San Antonio episode last night, that we recorded. There's city level conventions that are just kind of, I don't say smallish, but something that you really wouldn't go more than maybe a city over from to go to. Then there are kind of the regional ones, like the wizard shows, that they'll bring in some celebrities. It's worth going from maybe a couple of cities over or something. And then there's like San Diego, New York, and that kind of stuff, where it's just, these things are huge. Once you've been to one of these city things and says, yeah, this is kind of fun, go to like a wizard convention or some other kind of regional convention. Mid-Ohio Con, I'm trying to think of some other ones of that size, Dragon Con, although that one's getting to an, oh my god, it's huge level. Mega Con,
I've heard good things about Baltimore's Comic-Con, and I've heard good things about Heroes Con in Charlotte.
Yeah, both of those would be worth going to. But go to something that's more bigger than a city size but smaller than San Diego, and then go to San Diego. Because San Diego, the exhibit hall is the size of, like, square footage of 10 football fields.
Yeah.
And it's expanded into every hotel immediately around it and then one or two beyond. It's a lot of walking. It's a lot to do. You really want to know going in what sorts of things you're likely to enjoy, what you don't want to do, and planning accordingly. This is the first year, for instance, I made it to the Nerd HQ. That's been going on a good couple of years, I think. So planning your day and knowing how to spend your time at these things is challenging, but can really pay off if you do it well. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, I think that'll do it.
Cool. And a quick reminder that the deadline for the preview spotlight clips is the morning of August 9th, that Saturday morning. Hopefully with the previews having come out on July 23rd, y'all have had an extra week. Hopefully that gives everyone a chance to find some good picks and send them in, because again, these episodes really either are great or are not based on what you guys send in. So please send in some clips. Really appreciate it. Again, I need them bright and early on Saturday morning, August 9th. That way I have time to kind of assemble the whole episode, get that all done, because that's also the weekend I wind up doing some of the work on the Mayo Report. So if you need a little extra time, just email me. Please post on the forum what clips you're going to send, so I know that I've gotten them all and just know what to expect. It just makes the prep work a lot easier. So please send in some clips. Thanks. Join us next week as we discuss Harley Quinn number 8 from DC, Secret Avengers number 6 from Marvel, Doctor Who the 11th Doctor number 1, and Doctor Who the 10th Doctor number 1 from Titan Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.